Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Wessex Safety Hour conference call. My name is William, and I'll be your operator for today. We thank you for your attendance with today's conference, and at this time, all participants are in listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and at any time you require operator assistance, please press star zero, and an operator will be glad to assist you. As a reminder, everyone, this conference is being recorded. I'll now like to turn this conference over to your host for today, Ms. Teresa Chapstick. Please proceed when ready, ma'am.
Thank you very much, William. Good afternoon, Wessex Route. Safety hour with a difference today. Safety hour with a human element, more than usual. So I am in The Rock in room 2.5. Important if you want to come and wave at Mr. Tom Ellis. Tom being the reason for this call, actually, he came forward because he's been quite poorly recently with a diagnosis of bowel cancer. And we also are very fortunate to have Dr. Laura Alloway with us, who is an esteemed clinical director of cancer services in Hampshire. Now, the reason for the call. Grazia has billed it is, if you notice something, do something. So, what we intend to do now is walk Tom through his story, and he has some points to make in terms of getting people to come forward with ailments. So. They're treated early, and then Dr. Laura will assist with further clinical information. So, without further ado, I will say to Tom, tell us a bit about yourself.
Right.
Speaking up.
Yeah, I'm Tom. I've been married 27 years, got two children. My son is 27 and my daughter's 23. I'm a welder, been a welder since I left school, and like Tracy said, I've been diagnosed with cancer 2 and a bit years ago. So, there you go, that's me, in a nutshell.
You actually came forward, didn't you?
Yes, I did, yeah.
Yeah, can you tell me why?
The reason I came forward is that I wanted to, I wanted to tell my story so that people didn't go through the same situation that I went through, or if they felt that there was something wrong, that they had the courage to go to a doctor and get it looked at and get checked.
What difference would that have made to you?
Me, that would have a massive difference. I wouldn't have found. I wouldn't have had to watch my family get hurt. Wouldn't have had to go through the surgery that I went through. Possibly, I wouldn't have had to go through the chemotherapy that I went through, or the time off of work. A huge difference if I'd have got it early. It would have made a huge difference, especially to my family, not just my wife and children, but to my wider family, my brother, my mum. My in-laws, it touches everybody, all my friends, you know, so it would have made a big difference, massive difference.
Right, how long has this been going on, Tom? Give us a brief resume of the timeline, if you can, and what you've been through.
I got diagnosed 2.5 years ago. I went to the doctors. I had fevers, and I went to A&E, and I had an abscess in my bowel that I obviously didn't realise, and it turned out that I had bowel cancer, and also that I'd had two tumours in my liver. I had to get rid of the infection first, from the abscess, and then I had emergency surgery on my bowel twice because the first time I got an infection, so they had to open me up again. I spent some time in intensive care, about a week and a half in intensive care, and then a high dependency unit. That was very hard, especially the high dependency unit, because I was kind of with it more then, and to see the state that I was in from being a big guy that didn't need help, all of a sudden I needed help to do everything. Then I had chemotherapy for 3 months. Then I had my bowel operation, my liver op, sorry. That was another one. I was in intensive care for a week in isolation as well. So I was in this glass cubicle thing with an airlock and that. And then I had chemo after that. And then I had a year clear, which was great. That was fantastic, you know, to be live your life and get on with it. And then I got re-diagnosed with cancer again. That was in my lymph nodes by my aorta near my kidney. And I had 12 sessions of chemotherapy for that. And now, touch wood, thank God, I'm in the clear. But I'm still at high risk of cancer coming back. I'm at a 70% risk that it's going to come back, roughly.
And Tom, can I ask, in retrospect, did you know there was something wrong before you went to A&E that Sunday?
Yes, I did, yeah.
How long do you think that had been going on for?
If I'd be really honest, I think that had been going on a few years. So I'd had tummy troubles and been to the doctors quite repeatedly, and I'd excuse it as being IBS or something like that. I knew there was something wrong, but I didn't want to face facts. I was too scared to really deal with what it really could be, because, you know, through my experiences with cancer and all that, it's deemed as, you know, I always felt that's it. If you got that, you were in deep trouble, so.
So do you think in some ways you didn't want to go to the doctor and be very honest about the symptoms you were having in case they suggested you might have cancer and sent you for tests that might diagnose cancer?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. If I have to be really honest, before I'd make excuses to say no, that wasn't the case, but sitting here now, yes, absolutely. I didn't want to know, I didn't want that result to be positive. So the best way of not getting a positive result was not go. Was make excuses, don't go. But you have to remember that I put that off for, I was told I had cancer for 4 years. And I kind of knew, and I made excuses and hid from it for 4 years. And now that's put me in the position that I'm in now. Where my last diagnosis, I was told it would shorten my life. So.
And, I mean, certainly with many, many types of cancer, the earlier that we are able to catch it, the far greater chance you have of absolutely curing it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think many people don't realise that. And interestingly, in this country, we're particularly bad at presenting early with potentially embarrassing symptoms.
Yeah.
Like a change in our bowel habit or blood in our wee or our poo.
That's right, yeah. Not many people want to talk about we've got blood in our poo or something like that, you know. Like you check for prostate cancer, the doctor's got to, you know, do an internal examination. And for some guys, it's like embarrassing. But, you know, if you've got to look at it and think, if that was your child or your brother or whoever or your best mate or whoever it was, you say to them, don't be an idiot, you know, stop being so stupid, go to the doctor. And that's what I didn't do, and that's what I want people to get out there and just, you know, if they feel funny, just go to the doctor, go and get it checked, whatever, get it sorted.
And what we know is that for the majority, will probably be found to be nothing of any concern.
Yeah.
But for a few, it may well be that we can pick up the tumour very much earlier, and then it would be far less treatment than you've had to go through.
Yeah.
So if bowel cancer is picked up early, usually it's one operation and then potentially 6 months of chemo afterwards, but that would be it.
Yeah.
Whereas you were telling me you've been through so much more.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, funny enough, going through what I've been through, I've seen a lot of people in that position. I've met people that are in the worst possible position you could imagine, and also people that have been caught early. And it's quite hard to sit next to somebody when you're having chemotherapy, and you go, oh, what, you know, because you're really open about it when you're having chemo. You tend to feel like you're just this big sort of family of people that, you know, have all got cancer. It's an equaler. So, you know, and you can say to them, well, how long have you had it? And you ask them, they say, well, I got diagnosed early. And they say, what about you? And you feel stupid for not going early. You know, I say, like, oh, well, I had it 4 years, and I kind of knew, and I didn't do anything about it. Mm. And then you've got to tell them, they're telling you they got a good prognosis, and, like, they're virtually guaranteed that they're going to be okay. And my future has always been very uncertain because of not going soon enough, of ignoring it.
And I think the other thing to bear in mind is even 5 or 10 years ago, I don't think you would be here now.
No, I wouldn't, no.
So things have changed so dramatically, and for many cancers, including bowel cancer, they change almost week to week, that we have more options for drugs, for surgical operations.
Oh, yeah.
And actually, therefore, even if cancer isn't curable, it is treatable.
Yeah.
Allowing people to live a relatively normal life?
Yeah, absolutely. When I had my liver surgery, I spoke to my bowel surgeon. He was telling me, you know, it's a very close-knit group of people that do all this sort of thing. And he said, you get this guy, Tim, to do my bowel surgery, liver surgery. And no bones about it, 10 years before this, they wouldn't have operated. They'd have given me a year to live, and it would have just carried on. There would have been nothing they could do. So, yeah, we've advanced massively now. Your chemotherapy is huge. It's not what you see. It's not what you see on the telly. Like, you know, I've said before, like seeing people all grey and ill-looking. Some guys that are listening to this now would have actually seen me at work. They've seen me come in after the day before I'd had chemo, and to look at me, you'd never know that I'd had it. It does take a bit out of you, chemo, as much, you know, but it's fantastic what it can do, and the advances we've made, yeah, definitely.
And I think people often think that you're very badly sick and nauseous, and you vomit all the time with chemotherapy, and as you say, you're almost bedbound. But actually, these days, the drugs are so much better, and the treatments we give to prevent the side effects. I mean, as you say, you can lead a relatively normal life.
Oh, absolutely, yeah, without a doubt. You know, I can only say from my experience, but... you know, it's not what you think. I was very, very nervous of going up to the chemo wards and seeing the people there. I thought it was going to be like this, you know, like a grey room and you're going to be strapped to a machine and you're going to lose all your hair instantly. I didn't lose any hair. Yeah, I had other stuff. I had other side effects. But it's not something to be scared of at the end of the day. It's a good thing. It will help.
Yeah.
I lost my track a bit because I was doing, but...
And I think it's worth saying that 1 in 2 of us will have cancer at some point in our lives. And actually, for many of those people, they will be cured and they may not need very much treatment at all. So actually, it is something we really should be talking about.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, you're absolutely right, Lara. I, the times that I said to people, I mean, it was a bit of a joke where I was woken because I go, oh, did I tell you I've had cancer, I've got cancer or whatever. But I felt, I also, in another way, I felt that that was quite helpful because it took that stigma away from talking about cancer. And I hope, I really do hope, just for that small, you know, that small group of people that were at woken, that seeing me and hearing me talk about it and making it quite an open subject, that if they ever got any symptoms, that they'd feel more happy because I've opened it up and I've been open about it, that they'd be more happy to go and get it checked.
And perhaps encourage members of their family who have some change in their body to go and get it checked
out. Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's like you said, one in two of us will get it. It's the important thing to remember is at what level you catch it. It's you know, cancer. I mean, I got told the second time I got diagnosed, I was told it would be treated as a chronic illness. You know, if you say cancer, people look at it as being a death sentence, and it's not. It's hard, and it ain't easy, but it's easy, and I wouldn't say easy because that's not really fair, but it's less hard the earlier you catch it. It's less traumatic the earlier you catch it. The later you leave it, the worse it is, without a doubt.
Absolutely, and the less options there are for treatment, and therefore the more, it has an impact on everyone around you.
You know, like, I've got a grown-up son, he's 25, my daughter's 23, you know, and they're smashing kids. My wife, you know, like I said, I've been married 27 years, and to see them, all of a sudden they're not the people, they're destroying, you know, cancer was destroying them by what was happening to me, because I've always been the big Mr. Fixer at home and, you know, the heavy job and all that, and then all of a sudden my kids were helping me get up the stairs, or I couldn't fix things for them, like their cars or whatever, and they haven't, my son tried fixing the car for us and he got upset because he didn't know what to do, and you wouldn't believe just the mental devastation that it creates through your whole family. And then it's very, very hard as that one individual, like me, to watch all my friends and family get hurt by it, and that's my fault. I blame myself for that because I didn't deal with it when I should. You know, so, yeah.
And I think for anybody who... It's about getting knowing what's normal for you, for your body, and if there's a change, getting it checked out. And normally that would mean going to your GP, and then if your GP is concerned, they will then refer you into your local hospital. And actually, because we are so keen to diagnose cancer quickly, the hospital will see you within 2 weeks. So that can feel sometimes quite scary, because it means that things are happening very quickly, that actually there are government targets associated with that. So, but because they're good targets, NHS targets often, as doctors, we hate, that this is a good one. Yeah. So you're seen within 2 weeks, and then you may have a number of tests. Now, for 90% or more of people that go through those tests, they will be reassured that there is no cancer. Yeah. And if there is a different problem, that will be sorted out. So the 10% on average that are found to have cancer, they will then start whichever treatment they need very quickly. Yeah. So we would envisage that being able to happen within 2 months of them going to their GP.
Yeah.
And sometimes there are lots of different tests that are required. So maybe you need an operation, which is a test to look inside and see what else is going on, but actually that can feel quite a whirlwind to people and worry people.
Oh, it is, yeah, definitely. I mean, it's I would say probably the last 2 years my feet haven't touched the ground medically. Like I said to Julie one day, my wife, like I was just joking, I said I would love to have a month on our calendar. And she's got Tom, Julie, Martin, the kids on this calendar. And I would love to have a month where on my one, there's nothing. And it doesn't say doctor, hospital, you know, blood test, scan, whatever. I said, and that's what I said, because once you've got it, you know, at whatever level, then you don't get rid of, you don't lose it. There's always something will come up for me because of the level that I was at, the stage that I was at. I'll never get rid of it. I've got rid of the cancer, but I'll never lose the effects of cancer.
And I think the what they are doing is trying to keep a really close eye on you.
Yeah.
So if one of the cancers comes back,
yeah,
because actually from the original tumour in your bowel, very small bits, cells, travel around in the blood to your liver,
that's
your
right,
lymph nodes. And if there are still cells there that haven't been wiped out with the chemotherapy, they could go somewhere else. And if we can spot it early, we can either operate or give you more chemotherapy.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's why they're keeping such a close eye,
yeah,
on it.
Yeah, I have a blood test and a scan every 3 months. And yeah, it's for that. So it's reassuring in a way.
Yeah.
You know, dare I moan that I've got to go for a blood test and a scan every 3 months, but also in the other sense, it's a bit of a bind. It's a good bind, but it's still a bit of a bind. And you know, when you're at work or whatever, and you're talking to people, when you look around and you see all these people, none of them are going through this, and you just think, like, you know, I'd like to just be normal for a bit and not go through all that or whatever, but you know, that's just, unfortunately, that's just the way my cards have been dealt, so I've just got to get on with it. But
and all I would do is remind you, one in two people at some point during their lives will have a cancer. So actually, sometimes people are going through it that aren't necessarily talking about it, or someone very close to them is going through it.
Yeah.
And still, as a country, we're not very happy to talk about,
yeah,
it, because people do still have the stigma that it is, cancer is a death sentence.
Yeah.
So something like skin cancer, the treatment may just be to take off the abnormal mole.
Yeah.
And that, they did have cancer, but that has gone. And they'll be followed up for a period of time to make sure it doesn't come back. And then they will be discharged and live a normal life.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. People, unfortunately, we don't talk about it enough. We're not open about it enough. And like you said, people think that if you've got cancer, whatever cancer it is, because people don't ask what cancer it is, they just say cancer's cancer and that's death. If you've got cancer, you're going to die, because that's all you ever hear about. And I've learned this. You know, when I got diagnosed, I looked it up. I wanted to educate myself about what I had, and all I could find was bad news. I could only find bad stories. My consultant said to me, the best thing you can do is, if, when you go for your chemo, talk to the people then. When you're in hospital and you're in the ward, talk to the people there. Because you'll be amazed by the amount of good news and good outcomes rather than the bad ones. You only ever hear about the bad ones. You don't hear about all the successes that they have. And the successes far outweigh the bad news. So, and that's because we're getting better and better at getting there early.
Yeah.
Which is what this is about. I want people to get even better at getting there early.
And I think, picking up on something you said earlier, I think that there is sometimes some guilt around a cancer diagnosis.
Oh, yeah.
For example, if it is a cancer often related to something like smoking,
yeah,
lung cancer. Now, the fact is that some people who have never smoked in their lives get lung cancer.
Yeah.
And although there is a definite causal factor from smoking, many cancers have a number of different factors, and sometimes we don't know why one person has got,
yeah,
a cancer compared to another.
Yeah.
So actually, I think we need to pull away from the guilt of it.
Yeah.
And actually, that's not saying everyone go out and smoke 40 a day. I shouldn't say that as a doctor, but I think that it's really important that we remember some people's genetics mean they're more likely to get a cancer,
yeah,
and we're learning more and more about that all the time. Some of the things we're exposed to historically in the workplace or just through our general lives, cause it, but sometimes it just happens,
yeah,
and a cancer is caused when a cell that normally divides And if it divides into an abnormal cell, normally the body wipes that out.
Yeah.
But it's a cancer is caused when the body doesn't wipe it out, and the abnormal cell then grows very quickly. So sometimes we don't know why you got bowel cancer there compared to anyone else.
Yeah, because that was a thing with me. Mine wasn't. It wasn't genetic. It wasn't. I mean, partly because I smoked. I mean, you can't take that out of the equation. It does contribute to cancers. But I was told it was random.
Yeah.
It was quite literally bad luck. So, you know, that's how it is. You're right on the thing about the guilt, and I still have it now. I still feel terribly guilty because my family still suffer. They still suffer mentally from all this, and I'm in remission at the moment, and they're still suffering, and they always will, and that's guilt. I feel horrendously guilty every day.
But I'm guessing it's also been a bit of a sort of wake up to enjoy every moment.
Oh God, yeah. Don't get me wrong. I haven't been, like I said to some of my mates, I'm not going to go barefoot up the Himalayas or something like that. But, it makes you calmer. I've calmed down a lot, and I'm a lot slower. Some people might say, well, I don't know how he could get any more slower than he is, but I've slowed down a bit, and you know, I'm less quick to judge people or whatever. I'm more inclined to look at people now and think they may have something going on that I have no idea about, because you wouldn't know that I have. Looking at me, you wouldn't know that I've been through what I've been through. So
I can confirm that.
Thank you.
Sitting opposite you. The other thing, just to pick up on, is the screening campaigns that happen in this country. So actually there is a bowel cancer screening for the over 65s, and it'll soon become the over 60s.
Yeah.
And you're sent a screening kit through the post, and you just have to supply a poo sample into a little pot, and then they just look for blood that isn't visible. And if they find it, then they would call you for further investigations. But we know that certainly the cervical screening, the breast screening, and the bowel screening have picked up many cancers much earlier than people had symptoms.
Yeah.
So it's really about encouraging people to do this. It can sometimes feel, why would I do this? I'm perfectly well, there's nothing wrong with me. And that's just the people that should be doing it.
Yeah.
Because if there was something that was so small, you were unaware of it. So for example, if bowel screening had been much earlier, we may have picked up your cancer, you know, 4 years before you actually were in the hospital, and then it would have been a very different case.
Yeah.
So it's really about encouraging people to go for the screening.
Yeah, it's nothing to be scared of. It's nothing to be embarrassed about. I know it's not very nice putting a bit of poo in a bottle and sending it off, but at the end of the day, if you get past that could theoretically save your life. And it could save you watching your family getting destroyed mentally or whatever by what's going on with you as well, or the grief and aggro that follows it.
Yeah.
You know, it's very hard if you don't do something about it. Very hard.
Yes, and sometimes people say they haven't got time, or it's too difficult to get a GP appointment, and we all find it difficult to get a GP appointment. And I think it's about persevering, and you don't have to tell the receptionist what's wrong with you. It's just being really clear you need to see the GP, and no GP will tell you you've done the wrong thing. Now sometimes they may say, let's wait 2 weeks and see what happens, if they're not completely sure, but more and more they are very keen to be referring people with high risk symptoms into the hospital.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, GP's only got to do a test. You know, they can do tests, and don't use it as an excuse. Don't say, oh, I haven't got time, or I can't get to the doctors, or they're busy. Keep ringing. Keep pushing. Don't stop and ignore it, whatever you do.
And sometimes a symptom that people might have that might indicate that they have an early cancer may be very non-specific. They may be losing weight when they're not trying to. It might be having night sweats,
yeah.
where waking up sweating so that actually the sheets and the pillow are wet.
Yeah.
That's abnormal. Now, you might have that associated with a cold or a virus, but actually if that persists and you haven't got the other symptoms, that should be checked out. Difficulty swallowing or persistent heartburn, breathlessness, coughing up blood, or even it may be someone has a sort of smoker's cough that's very different,
yeah.
and it changes, and really that should be checked out.
Yeah.
And that can be as simple as the GP sending you for a chest x-ray. And that's very, very quick.
Yeah.
And that can just reassure you that actually it's okay. Or pick something up much earlier than otherwise.
Yeah, and that's the ultimate goal at the end of the day, isn't it? Get it before it gets worse. Don't leave it, whatever you do.
Yeah, and I think we mentioned earlier, in this country we're particularly bad compared to many other developed countries in presenting early, and we think it's around the embarrassment of symptoms. And actually, our message today, I think Tom and I agreed, was if you're worried about something and something's different, do go and get it checked out.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't stress that enough.
It's a good time to ask for questions.
Yeah.
William, are you there?
Yes, ma'am, I am here.
Right, William, if you could open up the lines for questions, please, that would be very helpful.
Will do. Ladies and gentlemen, please feel free to ask questions of our speakers today. And in order to do that, you will need to press star 1 on your phone, then immediately record your name, followed by the pound key. To ensure your question is registered, you must record your name. Please be sure to unmute yourself before recording your name. If your question has been answered or you'd like to withdraw your question, please press star 2. Once again, please press star 1 to record your questions, and in just a moment, we will review our question queue. Our first question comes from the line of...
Centipede.
Please proceed.
Hello, I was just... You talked earlier about bottles for poo, etc., samples. Would you get those from your GP? Is that how you get hold of those things?
Right, I'll answer that. Yeah, so if you have a change in your bowel habit or something that was concerning you, then you go to your GP and have a GP appointment, and if they are concerned, they would probably give you a sample cot and tell you where to take it or send it. They may decide to do other tests. For the bowel screening campaign, what happens is, so over 65s and soon it'll be over 60s, they send a pot in the post with instructions and explain what it's for and why it's happening. And then there's a stamped address envelope that you send it back to the lab.
Do you have any concerns then? Are you worried about something?
No, I just thought I'd try and clarify how that came about really, and what's the best route if you were interested.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No worries.
Thanks for asking. Yeah.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of...
Tandy.
Please proceed.
Oh, good afternoon. I would like to thank you, Tom, for coming forward. This is a very brave and very good thing to do.
Thank
I was
you.
Just wanted to say, it seems like in Surrey, the cancer screening is now faster because I had concerns 2 weeks ago. It took about a week. I had already gone through to the first hospital in Surrey. Once again, thank you so much, Tom. Thank
That's
you.
That's all right. You're welcome.
Our next question comes from the line of...
Chris.
Please proceed.
Yeah, hello. It's Chris Goodwin at Woking. In the 70s and 80s, we on the S&T were exposed to various levels of asbestos, both in lopes and relay rooms. I think it was in the mid-80s we were put on a BR asbestos register in case there should be repercussions, i.e. lung cancer. Does this register still exist for all the good it might do, is the question.
Hi, Chris. The only thing, I have no experience of the BR register. What I will say is I did have experience of it when I was at Heathrow, because we had hangars that had asbestos in them and we were on a register. And that was kept by the company. And also the union had a copy of it, because we did have a couple of cases of two lads. One was a friend of mine. They both contracted cancer through asbestos contact. So if you need to find the copy of it, but especially if you're expressing any symptoms, two things there. If you need a copy of it, you need to talk to Russell or Noel or whoever, and see what they can do for you. But also, if you are showing any symptoms, mate, like you're feeling a bit rough or whatever, please listen to what we've just said and go to the doctors, mate. Go and get it checked. Don't sit on it. Don't wait to see whether you get this list. So, you know, but yeah, you talk to Russell. You know Russell.
Russell Knott.
Yeah, so talk to Russell Knott, and he might be able to help you with the list.
Okay, sorry,
just to add to that, you can always talk to the Occupational Health Department about things like that, and we do know that asbestos exposure sometimes has delays of up to 40 years. In causing cancers, and the classic cancer that it's related to is mesothelioma, and around here, because of both the railway and the docks, there is a much higher rate, and again it's about trying to pick it up earlier. Now, even 5-10 years ago there wasn't very much available, but now we're more and more able to do operations to treat that, and there are more chemotherapies. So it is really important, if there are any symptoms, to present early and to be really clear you have had asbestos exposure. There is nothing you can unfortunately do to take that away, but actually it is worth, just if you are wanting chest x-rays and things like that to see whether you have got any damage, speaking to the Occupational Health Department may be helpful.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Mike, thank you.
There are no questions in the queue at the moment.
Right, okay. In which case, William, we'll probably have a quick discussion to make sure the highlights are known. So, three top tips from Tom. What would they be?
Is this going out?
Yeah, this is still going out.
My three top tips would be, don't hide from it. Get to the doctor if you feel any sort of symptoms, anything that's going wrong, and don't be afraid to talk about it. Ask. If you want to ask a question or you want to ask somebody about it, whoever it may be, like Dr. McMillan, all of them, ring them up or speak to somebody and ask, and then that way then you can try and lose the stigma and not be worried about it.
Get in early.
Yeah.
Get in early for longevity.
Yes, that's my biggest thing. Please, if you feel wonky, get to see your doctor or whoever.
Okay, thank you. Right, Dr. Alloway, can you, three top tips would be great. Would I be pushing my luck to ask for top tips on a wider scale, as in other potential cancers, or can we put that all into one bracket? So although we've focused on Tom, it would be handy, because obviously we know there are an awful lot of cancers about, and it would be a great opportunity for me to slip one in for everybody else.
Sure. I mean, I think it's worth just saying what the most common cancers for men are, and the most common is prostate cancer, followed by lung cancer, then bowel and bladder cancer. For women, the most common is breast cancer, followed by lung, bowel and uterus cancer. So actually, we have talked a lot about bowel cancer, but for men, and I appreciate there are probably more men on the call, just being aware of the symptoms and signs of prostate cancer is really important. Now, as men get older, they tend to need to pee more often and at night. But if there's a change in your normal pattern and you're concerned, or there's blood in the urine, or a change in your function, then it is worth speaking to the GP. Now, Tom mentioned sometimes that does then require an examination, but sometimes not, and sometimes a blood test is very, very helpful. And anyway, even if it isn't prostate cancer, there are many things that we can do to improve that nuisance of getting up in the night to pee. And for some people, it can be 3 or 4 times, which disturbs your sleep a huge amount. I think the main message I wanted to say is that actually, with all the changes in cancer treatment, survival has doubled in the last 20, 30 years. But there are still many people dying of cancer who don't need to if they had presented much earlier. And it's really a plea to everyone, and to, you know, talk to your friends and family about the message of, if there is a change in your body or the function of your body and it's not right, don't just accept it, but go and get it checked out. And what we know is, if you do present earlier, you will do so much better. Now, ladies with breast cancer, the majority are cured. So it is a simple operation and they are cured. For those presenting much later, there's a requirement for chemotherapy, radiotherapy, and ongoing treatments, some of which Tom described, and scans and things. But for the majority of people presenting early, it is a single operation, possibly followed by radiotherapy. So it is very much less treatment if you present early. And, you know, Tom talked about the impact on your family, very much less, and the guilt and everything else associated with that. Less time off work. We know cancer is expensive. There are lots of trips to hospital and things, and there are lots of really good support websites out there. And that was going to lead me on to my next thing, which is, I think these days we tend to Google everything and look it up. Tom mentioned that. Yeah. And what I would encourage you to do is look at some of the websites from, if you like, established organisations. I think you can, if you don't want to go to the doctor about a particular symptom, you could find evidence on Google that you don't need to. But I would encourage you to look at Cancer Research UK, or the Macmillan website, or Breakthrough Cancer. And they are websites that have been developed with doctor input and people who know about cancer and cancer treatment. Any of us can put things on the web, as you know, and there are lots of things about having bizarre diets and things that would take away your symptoms. But I would push you to look at the proper websites for good quality information. I guess it's also about, what can we do to reduce our risk of cancer? And I'm sure all of you know the things we should be doing, which is making sure our weight is controlled, healthy eating, eating a good balanced diet, and trying not to smoke, and exercise regularly. Now, those are the things we can do to reduce our risk, but unfortunately, even the most elite healthy athletes still get cancer. Yeah. So nobody can prevent it. But sometimes what we want are things that we can do to, A, make ourselves feel better, but actually feel we're doing something.
Yeah.
And what I would say is, I think from what Tom describes, he was very fit before he started all this treatment.
Yeah, I was relatively fit, yeah. Yeah, not bad.
So actually that has helped him get through the treatment.
Yeah.
And that is also important. And now is, you know, trying to lead as active a life as possible, yeah, which again will keep him as well as possible.
Yeah, I do. My consultant told me that to keep yourself active, and also the other thing as well, I mean, this is further down the line, but to your attitude is massive in your recovery from anything like that, or whatever. If you've got a positive attitude and you do as you're told, you'll get better, guaranteed. Doctors know best, without a doubt.
He's my friend now. Sorry, that's more than three things.
That's okay.
Yeah.
Right, so thank you very much, both. William, we'll give 30 seconds in case anybody's got an additional call, and if it doesn't come through in 30 seconds, we will leave it there. So thank you very much, Mr. Ellis.
Thank you.
And thank you very much, Dr. Arway, on behalf of Network Rail and my boys.
Thank you for the chance.
In fact, Ms. Capstick, we do have a couple of questions in the queue, and the first one comes from the line of
Peter.
Please proceed.
Oh, hello, it's Peter here from Wimbledon. You can hear me?
Yep, I hear you.
Yeah, Tom, you're talking a great guy. I myself was self-diagnosed with locally advanced prostate cancer like 18 months ago. I just wanted to say to everybody out there, don't be afraid to talk to anonymous about anything like this, because I've had help them not. So, if anyone is worried about anything, don't be afraid to talk to managers, line managers, anything, because everyone's been more than understanding to me.
I totally agree with you, Peter. My line manager and the lads I work with, fantastic, mate. I wouldn't have got through it without their support and being able to talk to them.
It's anyone to understand who hasn't got it. It's impossible for anyone to understand. But like I say, everyone has been more than helpful for me. So anyone with any doubts, that's the last thing I can worry about.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, I agree.
Thanks for today. Thanks very much. Take care.
Take care, mate. Yeah, good luck to you.
Yeah, mate. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Our next question comes from the line of
Chris Patel.
Please proceed.
Hi, Tom. I just really was a question. It was it's pretty from the safety team. It's really just to say thank you so much for sharing your story with us. It's incredibly powerful, and I think it'll certainly start to open the doors within the route, and we can have more of these stories shared amongst everybody, because I certainly think, as Peter had said, sharing this and having that network of support, we do have that within the route, and I just want to make sure that everybody is using that network of support, and if there's anything that we can do in the safety team where we can help, and the line managers, as you said and Peter has said, are there to fully support you. So really, firstly, just to say thank you, and secondly, to say please use the network of support that we do have. And that was all.
Thank you, Chrissy.
The next question comes from the line of
Charlie.
Please proceed.
Hi, Tom. It's Charlie.
Hello, Charlie.
Hello. I just want to thank you, because I hope I kind of helped you for a little, but you really changed my opinion of how to deal with cancer. And being much more open and honest about things. So I want to thank you for that.
Well, thank you, Charlie. Well, without all you guys supporting me, I don't think I'd have done very well, because amazingly, people at work like you and Lynn and all the others, when you're having a really bad day and you do feel rough, it's nice to have that sympathy and a cup of tea and a chat. So I thank you too.
Oh, thank you.
All right, mate. Thank you.
There are no questions in the queue. However, if you do like to get a question into our queue, press star 1.
Say whatever you want.
Well, yeah. I just hope the message has gone out.
Yeah.
I really do. I'm not a paid speaker. I'm just Tom Ellis, a welder, that's got a bit of a story to tell. But I'm one of so many that have got this story to tell. You know, I'm not an individual. I'm part of a huge group of people that are going through this sort of thing. I've experienced cancer in my life from a day, but I've never ever had that dread feeling, and I don't want anybody to go through that, because I can't explain that feeling when somebody says to you, you've left it so long that you're at this level, when you find out what that level was, and they called it T4, is that right?
Yeah, that's the size of the tumour.
Right, well, I'd gone so far that it had metastasized and spread, and to be told that it's not looking good. That's not good. And to be bimbling through my life quite happily, and then all of a sudden, I'm not bimbling through my life anymore. All of a sudden, I realised that I am not immortal, and I could die. And I was 47. And I'm 49 now, and I've been told, sooner or later, I hope not, touch wood, but sooner or later, this might catch up. And that's purely because I didn't react when I should have. That's because I left it going for 4 years. And that's what I want people to hear from this. I don't care if people phone in, don't ask questions, that's fine. As long as somebody goes away from this and doesn't just think, I'm all right. You know, as long as they don't leave it.
So the bottom line and the last words are, if you notice that something is wrong, get your ass down to the GP.
Yeah.
And
otherwise, you'll be telling my story.
Yeah.
That's the point. And if anybody feels sorry for me or thinks, oh, that's sad, don't be that person that's going to be that sad person. Don't be me. Well, you can be me, because it's quite good, but...
Right. So, thank you very much. Right. And William, I think we can close the call.
Yes, ma'am. With that being said, ladies and gentlemen, we thank you for your participation in today's conference. You may now disconnect. Please have a wonderful day.